Good morning, everybody. Today is Thursday, March 19th, 2015. And this is Before the First Cup with Jules here on UCY.TV. Happy Thursday. It's 25 degrees and cloudy here in upstate New York. Still, we have not seen much of spring, though we do have puddles in the backyard now. And I see about three quarters of my lawn. So I guess that's a step up from where we were. Hope everyone is doing well this morning. I actually got a decent night's sleep, and I think we have two channels playing today, mysteriously, after everything went offline yesterday and a password changed on a server, and we came back up. I had two channels on my mixer. So the new mixer arrives tomorrow, supposedly. So hopefully we won't have this issue anymore. I don't know, kind of bizarro that it started back up again. But hey, so anyway, I am out on my Before the First Cup page where I put all my stories. Those stories all feed in underneath the Before the First Cup chat on the UCY website, ucy.tv/BTFC. You could catch all those stories there. I think I have like the last top 30 stories feeding in there. So we're going to continue a little bit from where we left off yesterday, and then I think we're going to make a little bit of a detour and take a look at some of the crap that Microsoft is working on here, kind of dovetail into this whole new digital reality that they're forcing us into. The title of the show yesterday was Desktop Nanofactories, Healthcare Nanobots, and Immortality. And we, for the majority of the show, listened to an interview that I had found that I'd never seen before between Ray Kurzweil and Robert Freites, who is very well endowed in the nanotechnology world. He, when I went through and started digging into some of his stuff, some of the research he's been involved in and the papers that he's written, this dude is the real deal. It's kind of scary, actually, some of the stuff that he's done. He had a very, very, very long website with just links to all of his publications. And I found it very interesting. I didn't have a lot of time yesterday. I have a lot of stuff going on here. But when I was poking around, I ran across one of the articles that he had co-written titled Non-Destructive, which, gee, thank God, Non-Destructive Whole Brain Monitoring Using Nanobots. And then a colon, Neural Electrical Data Rate Requirements. Well, damn. You know what? So I guess we're safe until we get the data rate up for sucking all of the info out of our brains. Let's just read a little bit of this because I just, even the title freaked me out. But, you know, from what we heard yesterday, that's exactly what they're planning. He was talking about how they can go into the brain, how they can monitor everything that's going on in our body, how we can go in and repair things. This is where they're leading us. And I don't know about you, but hey, having been in technology for probably more than half my life, I'm saying stop the truck, Chuck, because this is not where we want to go as a species. This amalgamation between humans and machines should not be happening. And if anyone asks what they're trying to distract us from with, you know, shootings and bombings and all, you know, economic collapse and all this other crap that's going on, this is exactly it. This is the usurpation of biology on planet Earth. You know, that Freites yesterday had said that, you know, we talked about smart dust way in the past. You can go back to shows when I first started doing radio back in 2011, or yeah, actually, it was probably the end of 2011 when we started that WTF show. I remember that's how I met Madison Rupert. Was talking about smart dust on that show one night, and he was a caller and he called in to have a discussion about smart dust. So, I mean, that was like 4 years ago. I'm sure it's come much further along than it was back in those days. HP was working on smart dust for quite a number of years. I know that, actually, there was an article I had found the one time, but I'm not going to go look for it right now. There were a whole bunch of other companies, but basically, it was nano-sized material that, They've told us that we can already put the computing power of a desktop into a cubic micron. So, as they start releasing these miniaturized to the nth degree sensors, which is what they were talking about doing, into the atmosphere, they're going to be able to do exactly what Freitas was talking about in regards to being able to keep a lid on escaping nanotechnology, which it's going to be for way more things than that. But he had used the example of having to have sensors all over to be able to detect activity and heat signatures of these nanobots to ensure that any that are out there are ones that are supposed to be out there and not rogue nanobots. Now, rogue nanobots, self-replicating rogue nanobots, that should be your ultimate nightmare. It is mine. All right. Anyway, let's read a little bit of this document that Robert Freitas co-authored, Non-Destructive Whole Brain Monitoring Using Nanobots. It says, nanorobotics, a promising future medical technology, may provide the ultimate tool for achieving comprehensive, non-destructive, real-time in vivo monitoring of the many information channels in the human brain. Again, why do you think the Brain Project is going on? This is one small facet of a very large picture that is forming that is not in our best interest. This paper focuses on the electrical information channel and employs a novel electrophysiological approach to estimate the data rate requirements calculated to be 5.2 plus or minus 1.13 times 10 to the 16 bits per second in an entire living human brain for acquiring, transmitting, and storing single neuron electrical information using medical nanorobots corresponding to an estimated synaptic process spike rate of 4.31 plus or minus 0.86 times 10 to the 15 spikes per second. Introduction. The human brain is the only body organ that cannot, even in principle, be transplanted from a donor without fundamentally altering the individual persona of the recipient. Unless, of course, we look back a couple weeks to the Italian doctor who said within the next 2 years we'll be able to do full head transplants. So don't worry about getting a brain transplanted. We'll just give you a new body in the meantime while we're waiting for the Terminator bots 2045 to appear that we can put your brain into. No worries. So okay, if we change out the brain, it'll change the personality. Information pertaining to brain structure, neural connectivity, neurotransmitter activity, cellular and organ level neurological function, and higher mental states, including personality and self-awareness, can be permanently altered or lost as a result of physical trauma, pathogenic disease, and a variety of common degenerative disorders such as ALS, Alzheimer's, Huntington's, and Parkinson's diseases. Hey, they're working on all that as part of the Brain Project. Once destroyed, this information cannot even in principle be recovered using current techniques, thus permanently diminishing patient health. Well, that is why we're going to have someday the ability to upload ourselves and then re-download, according to Kurzweil. It must be a key goal of future medical technology to provide novel methods for non-destructively acquiring, transmitting, validating, and archiving comprehensive brain-related structural and functional information. Such person-specific information, once preserved, might subsequently be employed to analyze existing pathologies at a cellular detail and to devise appropriate therapies, and ultimately might be used to guide processes designed to restore the original state of the brain that existed prior to its pathological degradation. The emerging prospects of medical nanorobotics offers an ideal technology for monitoring, recording, and even manipulating many different kinds of brain-related information. Yes, the manipulating brain information we've already talked about pretty extensively in regards to DARPA and some of the research that they're doing with PTSD veterans, where they can remove traumatic memories and replace them with something happier. Again, we don't want to go there. I think I would rather live with some sort of PTSD than have someone poking around in my brain and manipulating my memories. If you follow that line of thought just even around a corner, you're going to discover how disturbing that is. If they can go in with a couple flashes of light and make you forget all of the scandals that you just learned about this week, then nobody's going to be watching the Watchers, and that's exactly what they want. I just actually saw the other day, and I'm really surprised that there hasn't been much coverage of this at all in mainstream. It was one short little article that came out of, if you can even believe it, USA Today, which, that's a national, very homogenized publication. Everyone in a hotel room gets one pretty much across the country. So, I mean, I would say that that was probably as mainstream as you could get. And they did a story the other day that the White House has now decided that they are not part of FOIA. And so they no longer have to respond to FOIA requests. So much for transparency. And notice how it comes right on the heels of the Hillary Clinton email scandal. Finding out also, I saw a story the other day that Eric Holder, come on, I forgot, criminal, bracket, criminal, attorney general, outgoing attorney general, Eric Holder had multiple email accounts as well. And gee, is that not surprising? So, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens there. But hey, they can go in and flash the traumatic memories. You'll never have to feel trauma over Eric Holder, George Bush, Hillary Clinton, or any of the cabal that are out there. So, hey, this could be a good thing for those who want to just stick their head in the sand, drool at the TV, and not think about anything that's important. Anyway, we will continue. This paper previews a proposed new medical technology called neural nanorobotics or neural anorobotics. Medical neural anorobotics may be capable of real-time monitoring a single neuron neural electric activity, local neuropeptide traffic, and other relevant functional data, and may also be able to acquire relevant structural information, including neuron surface features and connectome mapping. Now, we have briefly talked about some of the different, and I don't even know if I'd say briefly, it in spurts at different times. How's that? We've talked about all these different brain projects going on, and they are across the board in all the different universities, and a lot of the big tech companies are involved as well. National Institutes of Health, it's one big, disgusting orgy. We have federal funding sprinkling all over, DARPA money. This is all about the brain, cracking the mysteries. It's the last bastion of freedom, being able to think what you want to think without being made to think something, being able to have your own private thoughts. Hey, you can think anything you want to think as long as you don't act on it. Whether it's good, bad, or indifferent is what counts. But your brain is where you still have the freedom to scratch out ideas, to look at consequences, and then to make decisions, whether or not they're right or wrong. What they're talking about in this paper is the beginnings of the thought police. I don't even know how to express my anger over the fact that they literally want to get the shit into our bodies and be able, of course, it's always going to be under the guise that we're going to help some poor, desperate person who has been brain injured or has some horrific disease that, oh, we don't know how they got the disease. No, it doesn't have anything to do with the poisons you're feeding us in our food, air, or water. No. They just mysteriously appeared. But they want to get in there and be able to monitor everything you think, you say, you do, you breathe, you eat, you go, you touch. How is this even being allowed? In the name of medicine. Shame on you. Anyone who is involved in the medical or the engineering community that is involved in this shit right now should be ashamed of themselves. They are selling the human race down the river to be combined with some sort of freak show. This cannot be allowed. There's going to be no escape either. I mean, if you listen to Drexler and then Freitas yesterday, this shit is already in development. They're already doing all kinds of testing. We found out it's already in our food. Nanotech in our food. Medical robots line right up. We're going to cure your cancer. That's the dangling carrot to bite on. But remember, that carrot is poisoned. All right, let me find out where I ended up here. All right. Non-destructive whole brain monitoring would be enabled by the coordinated activities of a large number of cooperating nanorobots. Yes, probably cooperating in a swarm fashion. When coupled with single-cell repair capabilities, advanced medical nanorobotics provides the ultimate technology needed to treat Parkinson's and Alzheimer's diseases, other brain-related neurodegenerative disorders, epilepsy, dementia, memory and sensory disorders, spinal cord and neuromuscular disorders, pain and toxic disorders, and a wide variety of traumatic injuries to the brain. Now, as we move to a society, an Agenda 21 society, a carbon credit society, a climate change society, all of these buzzwords that they're pounding into our head. There are too many people on the planet. We're out of resources. We have droughts. We have crop failures. There's not enough food. There's not enough land. Well, you're gonna have to, at some point, give yourself up for the good of the many. And what I'm seeing here, as we're watching euthanasia and the ethics of euthanasia be debated in different countries across the world, Belgium was the one that comes to mind. And I just saw, I don't remember which country it was, maybe it was France, where they were just debating now and they were looking at passing legislation to make it legal to allow people to end their own lives on their own terms. And hey, I'm not arguing with that. I mean, if you're really sick and you're dying, do you really want to sit there and suffer for weeks or months on end in a hospital bed when you know what the end inevitably is going to be? Or do you want to end it with dignity? I mean, that's your own personal choice. And I don't think that anyone should have anything to say about that. But on the other hand, as I dug into eugenics and probably 6, 8 months ago, I had really dug in deep into eugenics and the history of eugenics and some of the programs that have gone on and this whole social engineering, and different populations that have been targeted historically. They've really put it into our heads that life is not sacred and that life, one life, is not necessarily important in the grand scheme of things. And I hate to tell you, but as I'm digging, and I never appreciated this. I mean, this tends to be something that's more of a religious end of things to look at the sanctity of life. And I've never been quite a religious person. Maybe from an academic perspective, I've studied lots of different religions and, creation myths and destruction myths and that type of thing. But from a theological perspective, I don't think I ever really looked at life as something that was given to us as a gift. But I have to tell you, A, being a parent and being the number one individual that was involved in carrying that life for 9 months. And then digging into eugenics and understanding this whole plan for population reduction that they're working on here, I have to tell you, this is again a whole nother piece of social engineering. As we watch daily children get blown up overseas and drone bombings and pointing fingers that this country is our enemy and this group of people is our enemies because we've been told that they're our enemies and it's okay that we've slaughtered thousands of people in the name of keeping you safe. You start to see that, A, when I see videos now of large numbers of dead bodies, and go out and look at some of the Pigmind playlists. There's all kinds of horrible playlists of just bodies strewn around and stuff. And I know I'm even like laughing like it's funny, and it's not even funny, but we become so desensitized to the loss of life now that it doesn't even faze us anymore. Well, that should cause alarm bells to ring. It doesn't faze us anymore that millions of people are dying needlessly at our hands. That is engineered societally, because in the end, what they want us to do is to give it up for the collective. See, we're not worth anything if you're not adding to the GDP. If you're not contributing to the society, if you're homeless, if you're sick, if you're injured, if you're old, you're not worth anything to the people who are running the show, to the people on the stock markets, to more than 50% of our Congress who are millionaires. You are a thorn in the side. You're costing us money. And I really think that that's what this is all about. So, you know, in the interim, they're going to pretend that you're so important that they want to help your ills, that you're injured and disabled and you have all these physical problems. So step right up, because you poor people, we care about you and we're going to fix your problems. All you got to do is take this new fangled technology that we've been developing, and they're going to fix everything. But what you don't understand is that you are Generation One guinea pig. Step right up, because that's all you are. You're worth something still. You're worth them erasing the bottom line item budget for research and development, which, of course, for any biopharma company that's out there, any nano company, any mad science gone mad company that's out there that hasn't had any type of approval for stage one human trials, you are the cash cow. We had read back a few months ago, we were looking at some of the pharma companies as to how much they spend in their yearly research and development budgets. And for some of those companies, it was trillions. So guess what? If they don't have to set aside that money anymore because they have all kinds of hurt and injured people lining up, the desperate, the indigent, the mentally compromised individuals that want to find their old life and have some help, hey, you guys are exactly who they're looking for. Beware. I would say, I don't know, if it was me, I'm going to say, let me just go naturally. But I will guarantee you that there will be many, many, many people out there that would be more than willing to try to get it back. And I don't know, this is a very large ethical discussion, because if they could get you back to where you used to be, that would be a wonderful thing. But like one of the things that Freitas mentioned yesterday is, at what point are you no longer human? As they put these millions of nanobots into your body to go through and alter you, inject things into your cells, comb your cells. I mean, he even said that they can go through every cell in the human body. They can go through and swap out proteins. You know, Kurzweil rubbing his hands together with his evil scientist look on his face. Can we replace the nucleus of a cell? You know, I mean, this is all coming to fruition. All right. Non-destructive whole brain monitoring would be enabled by the coordinated activities of a large number of cooperating nanorobots. When coupled with single cell repair capabilities, advanced medical nanorobots provide the ultimate technology needed to treat Parkinson's and Alzheimer's and other brain-related neurodegenerative disorders, epilepsy, dementia, memory and sensory disorders, spinal cord and neuromuscular disorders, pain and toxic disorders, and a wide variety of traumatic injuries to the brain. The advent of medical nanorobotics requires the ability to build nanorobotic devices and to produce these devices in sufficient therapeutic quantities to treat individual patients. The most advanced medical nanorobots will likely be fabricated using diamondoid materials. Yes, we heard about the diamond nanorobots yesterday. And these materials provide the greatest strength, durability, and reliability in the in vivo environment. So there you go. That's why they decided to go with diamond versus graphene, silver, or gold, which are some of the other materials, or silicone. That's the single celled sheet. That's why they're going with diamondoid substances versus any of these others that they've been using in the nano world. The practical technical foundation for advanced medical nanorobotics requires answering a fundamental question: how to build nano diamondoid robots, starting from current manufacturing technologies. To answer this question is the main subject of an ongoing international collaboration whose principal objective is the construction of a nano factory. Yes, we talked about that yesterday too, capable of mass manufacture of medical diamondoid nanorobotic devices for medical treatments. Now, that was from 2006, that reference there, and that interview we heard yesterday. I was able to, I think it was from at least 2009, just based upon some of the dates they referenced in there. So here we are, 5-6 years later from that interview. I mean, you got to believe, we already saw, we heard a clip yesterday, they were just getting ready for human trials for nanorobots to treat cancer. Possible general methods to achieve massively parallel molecular manufacturing technologies such as a nanofactory have been reviewed in literature, and methods for controlling individual and large numbers of medical nanorobots are also the subject of current research. And Freitas had talked about them building software. They were actually going to run in a little program inside of you. And we know, too, that the Weiss Institute at Harvard, where they've been working on the RoboBees and any of these other little micro air vehicles, these mini drones. That's one of the things that they've been working on, is swarm technology for these robotic, unmanned robotic devices to be able to interact and work together in large swarms like bees do, or ants, for example. An ongoing PhD thesis effort is investigating the potential feasibility of real-time, non-destructive whole-brain in vivo monitoring of the many informational channels of a human brain, in particular single-neuron electrical information, local neuropeptide traffic, and other relevant functional data, and a comparison of the whole-brain data rate monitoring requirement with the theoretical capabilities of medical nanorobotics is the first step in assessing the viability of this future technology. This paper goes on for a very long time, and there's lots of mathematical calculations in here after this. Let me see if there's actually a date on this paper at the very top. Would be nice if they would have put a date on it. There is not, but I'll drop that in the chat. Read it and weep. It's very disturbing to me. There we go. Nanomedicine.com is where that came from. I haven't dug into that site anymore, but I bet there's lots of good stuff out there. I saw out a science alert out of the Australia this morning. A story has come out. New Alzheimer's treatment fully restores memory function. Of the mice that received the treatment, 75% got their memories back. So don't think this isn't already going on. I'm not exactly sure what they did in the study, so let's read it. But the brain is where they are focusing like a laser their research right now, as well as nanorobotics. All right, this story, new Alzheimer's treatment fully restores memory function. Australian researchers have come up with a non-invasive. This is something actually I saw last week about using ultrasound. And if we go back to 6 or 8 months ago when we looked at some of the DARPA technologies for erasing and restoring memories, one was using light flashes, two was like a brain implant, and three was using sound waves. Australian researchers have come up with a non-invasive ultrasound technology that clears the brain of neurotoxic amyloid plaques, structures that are responsible for memory loss and the decline of cognitive functions in Alzheimer's patients. They don't tell you how you get the amyloid plaques. They don't tell you that it may have something to do with aluminum or GMO or any of the other chemicals that are in the air. We just have this, or that it is now, they're thinking, related to bovine spongiform encephalopathy, mad cow disease, malformed proteins. Dell had dug up a little bit of research in regards to malformed proteins. And Dell, please excuse me because I don't remember the details of that, but we should dig into that one of these days. There is a direct correlation between Alzheimer's, mad cow, CVJD, CVD. They call it the Krupp-Cheve-Jacobs disease, the chronic wasting disease that we see in deer. Basically, it makes your brain Swiss cheese. All right, let's read a little bit more. If a person has Alzheimer's, it usually is the result of a buildup of two types of lesions, amyloid plaques and neurofibrillary tangles. Amyloid plaques sit between the neurons and end up as dense clusters of beta amyloid molecules and a sticky type of protein that clumps together and forms plaques. Neurofibrillary tangles are found inside the neurons of the brain, and they are caused by defective tau proteins, or DAU, TAU, that clump together in a thick, insoluble mass. This causes tiny filaments called microtubules to get all twisted, which disrupts the transportation of essential materials such as nutrients and organelles along them, just like when you twist up a vacuum cleaner tube. Hey, listening to Freitas yesterday, he had talked about being able to use nanorobots in your arteries to be able to clean out plaques. Wonder if they could do the same thing, sending them right into the neuron tubules to clean out the pent-up proteins. As we don't have any kind of vaccine, which I bet's a good thing, or preventative measures for Alzheimer's, a disease that affects 343,000 people in Australia and 50 million worldwide. It's been a race to figure out how best to treat it, starting with how to clear up the buildup of defective beta amyloid and tau proteins from a patient's brain. Hey, the nanorobots will do that. Don't worry about it. Now, a team from Queensland Brain Institute at the University of Queensland have come up with a pretty promising solution for removing the former. Published in Science Translational Medicine, the team describes the technique as using a particular type of ultrasound called a focused therapeutic ultrasound, which non-invasively beams sound waves into brain tissue by oscillating super fast. These sound waves are able to gently open up the blood-brain barrier. Now, that's frightening. Which is a layer that protects the brain against bacteria and other horrible things, and stimulate the brain's microglial cells to move in. Microglia cells are basically waste removal cells. So once they get past the blood-brain barrier, they are able to clear out the toxic meta amyloid clumps before the blood-brain barrier is restored within a few hours. Now, I'd like to understand a little bit more about this. So, are microglia, microglia, are those cells normally allowed into the brain? Or are we hijacking the blood-brain barrier with high-frequency sound to allow these cells into the brain temporarily to clean it up, and then they put the border back down? I don't know about that. We'll have to dig into this. The team reports restoring the memories of 75% of the mice they tested it on with zero damage to the surrounding brain tissue. So I guess that's great. And you'd hope that there wouldn't be a lot of damage to the brain using ultrasound since they do it two times, if you're near 40 at least, they do it at least two times to the developing fetus in your uterus. So if it caused brain damage, I would say that ultrasound for checking on a developing fetus would be right out as well. They found that the treated mice displayed improved performance in three memory tasks: a maze, a test to get them to recognize new objects, and one to get them to remember the places they should avoid. Quote, "We are extremely excited by this innovation of treating Alzheimer's without using drugs, so that is definitely a bonus. The word breakthrough is often misused, but in this case, I think it really does fundamentally change our understanding of how to treat this disease, and I foresee a great future for this approach." The team says that they are planning on starting trials on higher animal models, such as sheep, and hope to get the human trials underway in 2017. Now, with this huge explosion of 50 million people with Alzheimer's worldwide, what a ripe, juicy financial marketplace that is to put your research. And if we start digging into the cause of Alzheimer's and how, you know, hey, we don't really know how it gets here, it makes one wonder if this again isn't one of those manufactured illnesses that they knew was going to happen over a generation that now, you know, we can do the problem reaction solution. And it also greases the skids for all kinds of money to be pouring into brain research. There's an interview here. I don't know how long this is. We can click on this really quick. I would be interested if it is only a minute or two in hearing what this dude has to say, but I don't even know. It's not loading. So we're not going to hear the interview. I think that's enough right now anyway, because I want to jump into some stuff about Microsoft. So as we're looking at this takeover, actually, let's go to Google first. From October of 2014, there was a clip that came out. I'm going to connect here. From a local affiliate in Denver. And I don't know if I actually saw a clip on this, but we had read a story about Google and their 100 scientists that they employ working on nanorobotics to put into the bloodstream, give you some sort of little wristband where they can report back to, and these nanobots would be like your little Star Trek doctor in your bloodstream, diagnosing and fixing any problems and diseases. Well, this local affiliate back in October of 2014 comes out about Google's announcement of their nano pill. So let's see if we can listen to this for a second. Oh, hold on, it's on mute. Here we go.
Get right over now to digital producer Ryan Trunier with some amazing news from Google. Ryan, soon you can take a daily pill that monitors your health for signs of cancer and other diseases. Google announced they're using nanoparticles that seek out and attach themselves to cells and proteins inside the body, and a wearable device that would monitor the activities of these nanoparticles. The goal is to provide an early warning system for disease, and the tech company claims we won't have to give blood or urine samples anymore, and that we'd only visit a doctor when the warning system indicates problems. Project Nanoparticle is the latest from Google's semi-secretive Google X facility, who created Google Glass and is currently perfecting the driverless car. Now, Lionel, Google is super serious about this pill, and they'll say we'll see it in 5 years.
Okay.
Now, here's the thing. This should be very concerning to us that we have these tech companies that are now diving into nanorobotics and in getting nanobots into our bodies to be able to diagnose and fix things. If you realize that Ray Kurzweil is now the director of engineering at Google, it seems to make a lot more sense. But did you hear what he said? You're not going to have to give blood and urine samples. Oh, thank God. Or go see a doctor unless it's something that's very serious that the nanobot decides you should go see a doctor. And if you then couple that along with what we've seen with Obamacare, government regulated healthcare, precision medicine, the electronic health records database, the ability for doctors to keep up with the influx of all the patients now that they're trying to give everyone, which really isn't working, healthcare, electronic medicine, being able to use remote diagnostics. This makes a lot more sense. The whole puzzle is being put together.
Driverless car is one thing, but detecting cancer with a pill, that would be incredible. I hope it works out.
Yeah, you know, the company says that Google, or one of the things that we do wrong with cancer screening is that it's always diagnosed too late.
Right.
And that 80% of cancers are preventable in the first phase.
All right, Ryan. Great story. Thanks.
And I mean, I'm not saying detecting cancer early would be a bad thing, because it absolutely would not be. But, you know, to understand the technology behind nanorobotics and then to be a guinea pig for this technology, be one of the first to line up, like some of these people that are lining up for some of these experimental vaccinations. I don't know if I'd want to be 1.0. That's just not the way that it should be. All right. So anyway, now let's jump off. We're going to talk about Microsoft, because Microsoft is also in the game. One of the Microsoft founders also has his own immortality longevity project going. So don't think that Microsoft isn't a part of this. Bill Gates, who still has jumped back in as interim or part-time, I don't even know what title they gave him this time, but Bill Gates is still involved in Microsoft. He came back for a little while to kind of help direct the company. But he's also, we saw the other day, invested in large manufacturing facilities for some of these newfangled vaccines that they're coming out with using these newfangled technologies. So don't think Billy doesn't have something to do with this. We've talked about the Internet of Things. The Internet of Things is involving many of these tech companies, Samsung, Cisco. You know, Cisco owns probably 90% of the global Internet backbone, Google. The Internet of Things is going to be able to put not only every device that's out there, including your dishwasher and your microwave online, but also eventually it's going to be your cells that are going to be online as well. So this weird video came out yesterday, like, because poor Microsoft, you know, they're getting rid of Internet Explorer, I saw, and Office, which was their big moneymaker globally, worldwide for many years, is going to a software as a service model. Now, remember, Microsoft ties right into this. We talked about the antitrust lawsuit way back when Bill Gates bent over to the feds and gave all the backdoor keys to the surveillance state. And, oh, poof, the antitrust lawsuit that was threatening to break up Microsoft as a monopoly just mysteriously went away. Microsoft has been part of this control structure for a long time. Microsoft managed to get their software on desktops in every single developing nation that's out there. He was meeting with world leaders in countries that our government hadn't been to in years, that we had embargoes and whatever against. And Bill Gates was shaking hands with world leaders back in the mid-90s. So let's listen to this. It's titled, and it's all about money, people. Can Microsoft make money off the Internet of Things? So, you know, this, even connecting your brain to the network is what it's all going to be about. Artificial intelligence, supercomputing, cloud computing. Your data is going to be extracted and nothing will be yours anymore.
One of the things that's happening is, if you look at our lives today, you have computing everywhere. It's ubiquitous. And the one thing that happens when you have computing everywhere and all that computing is connected, you collect a lot of data. In fact,
and once they get the nanorobots connected, I mean, that's what Freitas was talking about yesterday. You know, we're going to have data streaming from millions of points every second.
You know, analysts estimate something like, first of all, there'll be 30 billion or so of these internet-connected devices generating something like 44 zettabytes of data by 2019. And the thing that happens, though, is with all this data, the key is to figure out how to get to insights. So I think about this as, in all this big data, the real currency is finding the small patterns. And then to be able to act on that insight, either in
Yeah, well, here you go. Finding the patterns and then acting on the insight. Anything that's been put into a database can be sliced and diced, and you can start seeing trends. That is very important for executive managers in a business. That's what we did. That's what I did when I was in the corporate marketplace. That was my last big thing that I was doing for a job, was collecting data in a database and slicing and dicing for executive managers to look at trends. That's how you can decide what products are working, what products aren't, where you want your future. You start seeing growth in a certain trend. And guys, once our data, not only what we're doing or where we are, which is what they're doing right now with GPS tracking of our cell phones and whatever, but we're talking, I mean, once you get to the nanorobotics evolution here, we're talking about blood levels. We're talking about thoughts. We're talking about chemicals. We're talking about thought crime. And when you equate this then, and we're going to take a look at Microsoft's Cyber Patrol Division. They also have one at the NSA that Keith Alexander was instrumental in creating. The FBI is on board. Your alphabet agencies are all doing this already, but not at a cellular level. But hey, we've already established that's coming. This is the huge danger. This is where we have been completely 100% trapped in this net that they are pulling the drawstrings and they're just about closed, people.
Individually or at an organizational level or even these industry business processes.
If I'm a client, what am I buying from you? Am I buying a suite of applications? Are we talking about services?
For us, it's actually, we think about individual, empowering individuals, organizations, and even entire industries. So if you are an individual, so you could say, for example, get Microsoft devices, either a phone or a PC, and you're going to have an intelligent agent. In our case, it's called Cortana. This intelligent
Cortana. Like the Cortex, an intelligent agent on your computer.
The agent or the assistant, a personal assistant, is going to help you leave meetings on time so that you can catch your flight. It'll help you reschedule your, date. So things like that individually, as well as if you're an organization, we have tools in Office and Office 365 where you can discover the information. And one of the tools that we actually launched today is something called Power BI. It brings all of the data that you have into your fingertips so that you can make decisions and you can gain insights.
Is that enough of a business to replace the cash cow that was Office? Is that what the replacement is going to be?
See, for us, if you look at through any of these changes in computing paradigm, today we are talking a lot more about it's the mobile experiences. It's not about just one single mobile device. It's in fact, I have multiple devices in my life and you want to be able to have your data and your applications roam through all of that. And that's what the future of Windows is. Office is no longer just about Word, Excel, PowerPoint everywhere. It's about these new capabilities. So that's the way we are driving our business going forward.
Yes, the new capabilities to scan everything you're doing, to look at your calendars. And this is the next step to this augmented cognition that SLC had dropped us a TED conference video on like 6 months ago. I mean, eventually it's all going to be in your head. It's going to be in your lenses of your eyes where you can blink and you'll be able to see where your next meeting is. The digital assistant will be making decisions for you as part of this augmentation. This should be horrifying. I do quite well on my own. I don't need some computerized artificial intelligence telling me what I should be doing next.
Sounds like there's a big focus on productivity. Is that fit in with being an innovative consumer brand? Like, where does gaming fit in with that, for instance? Or are these
gaming she starts talking about? Now, remember, too, we've discussed gaming at length. Gaming was a way to be able to pull many of our children into this alter world, to be able to bleed between the physical reality and the matrix reality, to be able to stimulate that part of the brain that they love to dangle the carrot at, that addictive part of the brain that produces the dopamine, the adrenaline, the serotonin. It's the way to control people. So the fact that she mentions gaming, and gaming is a part of the Internet of Things, it's helped create an entire generation of drone pilots. I mean, thank God, here we go.
Just difference for a portfolio?
I mean, of gaming is one category that we have, obviously, with Xbox have a great brand, and PCs, in fact, 10% of the PCs are bought for gaming. So we are in gaming for gaming's sake. But the rest of the company is all focused on productivity and platforms. Mm-hmm. And productivity, to me, has very broad and deep meaning. It's not just about work, as I said, because for us, you and I, even managing our schedules, managing our time in our overall life is as important as what it is to have a very successful meeting or a conference or what have you.
We've seen reports that people are not buying new PCs, not refreshing their PC purchases. Is that going to impact your business based on what you just described to me?
I mean, overall, if you look at what's happening, as PCs have some headwind, there's tailwind in new device categories. There's new tablets. There is new smartphones. These are all categories that Windows now spans. So I don't define our long-term success based on one form factor's rise or fall. It's a question of, are we reinventing our software, our operating systems, our devices, so that it can span what's going to be an ever-increasing set of devices that we use in our lives?
Yes, an ever-increasing set of devices that are going to be infiltrating our lives is the way he should have termed it. So now let's look at the Microsoft Digital Crimes Unit. Protects us inside and out from various cybercrime activities. And oh, we should be just bowing to Microsoft because we need to be kept safe.
Cybercrime Center, and I'm here with
Richard Voskovich, Assistant General Counsel for the Digital Crimes Unit.
Wow, I feel like I'm on a movie set. We've got an evidence room and a forensics lab. This is really cool stuff, and you get to work here.
Yes, we envision this as really allowing us to pull all our resources together even better, having a space where we could really collaborate amongst each other in the company, but also to bring in academic, industry, and law enforcement partners to further the fight against criminals.
Wow.
The objective here is to get everybody together to be able to analyze malicious code, take a look at what's going on the internet, and what are some of the new threats that are coming up that are targeting people. That involves reverse engineering malicious code, doing static analysis, and then trying to figure out who's controlling the particular malware and who's behind the botnet in particular. And once,
if you're listening to how this guy's explaining this, this is very much what that Robert Freitas was saying yesterday in regards to tracking nanobots, to see who owns them, to see whose code it is, to be able to track. They have these large charts that they're looking at trends, just like the dude before talking about, you know, the new Internet of Things with Microsoft. This is what they're doing, people. It is to collect all of our data once our data is online and to be able to track it all, every single bit of it. And having Microsoft Digital Crimes Unit, where they're bringing together law enforcement across the world and universities and researchers into one place and be able to pinpoint and learn to track data, this should be very concerning to every single one of us.
We figured that out. We then come up with a legal strategy so that we could take proactive action against it.
Okay, so basically what you're saying is you protect me from people stealing my personal information, people taking over my computer when I don't even know it, or sending spam, those types of things?
Yeah, I mean, for example, some of the threats we've taken down in the past would access your finances. A person would go ahead and type in a particular bank. They would think they'll be doing a banking transaction, when in reality, all of their information is being captured and then being sent back overseas to a cyber criminal.
All right, so I'm going to stop here because he just goes in and talks about all kinds of horrifying crap that they're going to do. But as far as tracking us, I got to find, though, this last... I thought I posted it here, but I didn't. Let me find this last clip that came out this morning. So they're going to be able to track people who are stealing your information, find out where it was passed back to. Here it is. and getting into your computer without you knowing. There was something that came out of RT yesterday, and really quick, I'm going to see if I can play this. I'm going to skip past her Saturday Night Live-esque intro because I want you to hear this. So, yes, we're worried about cyber criminals, but who's the actual cyber criminal?
Skip. It was recently discovered that the NSA has been hiding malware in computer hard drives, giving the agency unprecedented access to everyone's computers, whether they're connected to the internet or not. So the NSA can spy on the majority of the world's computers now, and that's pretty crazy, which is why the next part of the story is extra wacky. The researchers who discovered the NSA malware also published a list of the URLs that the malware uses to connect back to the NSA. Now, they could have used any domain they wanted, right? They could have just made up strings of random letters and numbers, making it look like gibberish. But they didn't. They actually registered domains to use for their malware, over 100 of them in total, with really, really stupid names. Some of my favorites include thesuperdeliciousnews.com, businessmadefun.com, housedman.com, suddenplot.com, webbizwild.com, and forboringbusinesses.com. Those are just weird and funny. But they also used a whole bunch of domains that sound like legitimate businesses, like advancedtechnology.com, adservicestats.com, and customerscreensavers.com. And now that the URLs have been compromised and the NSA can no longer use them for their little spy party, there's a chance that they'll just let them go up for sale. Wired Magazine got an expert to estimate the worth of the NSA's URLs, and they came up with a total of about $200,000. But by far, the absolute worst URL of the bunch, the one that leapt out to me from the list as the absolute craziest, is IslamicMarketing.net. Yeah, the NSA actually owned the URL IslamicMarketing.net and then used it to spy on people's computers. They actually had the audacity to secure and then use a domain with the word Islam in it to connect to spying malware.
Oh, there you go. So the criminals that are spying on you is the NSA. All right, guys, the show's about over. Make sure you stick around tonight. It's Thursday night. We got Kevin Blanch maybe live up next. Chuck Ocelli live at 6 p.m. Eastern. Hal Anthony's show from this week starting at 8 p.m. Eastern. Double Cross with Drew and Chuck live at 10. And Anti-Media Radio with SM Gibson at 11. All right, guys, everyone have an awesome Thursday. And I will catch up with you tomorrow. Take care.